Okay, today is September the 19th, the year 2004. I'm here in Manhattan, on Central Park South, with Lorraine Allison Romanchuk, who came through Ellis Island with her mother, who was pregnant at the time. Lorraine was at that time 1.5 years of age. And she and her mother left England in 1947 from the port of Liverpool.
Yes.
And arrived at Ellis Island then. Okay, this is Janet Levine for the National Park Service. Okay, if we could just start at the beginning, if you would say, please, why don't we start with your mother and your father's names?
All right. My father's name was Francis Stephen O'Neill Batisse, and my mother's name was Henrietta Frith. She didn't have a second name.
And the how do you spell her last name?
F-R-I-T-H.
Okay. And now, where were each of them from?
They were both born in Glasgow, Scotland. My mother's parents and her family were all Scottish descent that we know about. My cousin, actually, my mom's side, she became a Mormon, and they're very, very good at
genealogy.
Yes. Uh-huh. So she's researched all of her family and my Nana. So when I go home, I'll be really talking to her a lot more about all of that. On my dad's side, his father was born in Glasgow, but his grandfather was born in Naples, Italy.
Uh-huh. And how about his mother?
She was Irish descent, and she must have... I'm not sure if she was born... I would say she was probably born in Scotland, but her parents...
Uh-huh.
Yeah, her mother and father were probably Irish.
Yeah.
Because their last name was O'Neill.
O'Neill. Okay.
And that's why my dad has O'Neill in his name.
Uh-huh. Okay. And how about the war years, as far as your mother and father's experience?
Oh, my mom told me that they'd come home from work and it'd be a building on their street would be bombed. It'd be gone where they lived.
They were living then in London?
Yes.
At that point? Mm-hmm. Uh-huh.
They were married and were living there. She was at her job at the factory, and I don't know exactly where he worked, but he would have his job to go to as well. And she talked about the blackouts and the sirens and the coupons and lining up for food.
Uh-huh.
I think they had a very simple life then. There wasn't a lot of... they'd go down... They loved going down to... They called it the Pally, but the Palace, and it was a ballroom. I think that was the only thing that... because there was no TV. They had a radio, but... that was their form of entertainment, and their social life was going down to the dancing.
So they were married, you said, before the war started?
Yes. I think it was 1940, 1939 or 40. I'll have to look at that again.
And you said then that your mother was working in a factory, even though she had worked in a shop.
Shop. I think she worked in a shop in Argyle Street. In Edinburgh, when she was just out of school.
I see.
And then my Nana and my aunt and my mom moved to London. So their formative years were in Glasgow. And then after my grandfather died on my mom's side, I think that's when my Nana decided to move to London. Because my mother met my dad at the dancing. Because I said, where did you meet him? And she said, I had a dance.
In London?
Yes. They were wonderful ballroom dancers. They really did dance well together. So I think that was their whole life, was just going to the dancing. That's all they did.
Wow. So do you know any more specifically why your grandmother and your mother and your aunt moved from Scotland to London?
I think economics was just to have a better life.
Uh-huh.
I think they all had stars in their eyes because that was the movie star era. I mean, their whole lives were influenced by what was on the big screen in those days. And Americans were very prevalent to show a very prosperous and fun-loving sort of life on the screen. And so, of course, they all thought, oh, this would be wonderful to be like that. And they were both my mother and especially my aunt, they were very attractive women. And you sort of get fooled probably by life, thinking, oh, maybe, you know, if you're standing in line, someone will discover you or whatever, you know. And they came from nothing, so they, you know, anything was better than what they had. So I think that was why my Nana made hats. That's what she did.
Oh.
She was a milliner. So she probably got a job somewhere doing that, and the girls just had to go and get a work in the shops. That's what they did.
Do you think they were thinking of coming to...
No, I don't think
so. No, they were just getting to a bigger,
to a
more prosperous
life.
Place. Yeah.
And then my aunt, her name was Carol, Agnes Gow actually was her name, and they called her Carol for some reason. I don't know how you shorten Agnes Gow to Carol, but
G-O-W?
Yes,
mm-hmm.
Agnes Gow. She was named after an aunt or a sister of my Nana's. Anyway, she married a fellow called Jack, who was in the Navy, and when the war broke out, he went to sea and died. Never came back. And then a relative of Jack's, his name was Vic Dovey, came to pay his respects as part of the Dovey family, and he ended up marrying Auntie Carol. So, but this time, Auntie Carol was pregnant with Jack's baby, the
mm-hmm.
one who died at sea.
Mm-hmm.
And so Uncle Vic just assumed the responsibility of being Jackie, this is my cousin, Jacqueline, her father. And they had another daughter, Avril, which was Uncle Vic's daughter. So there's two. I have two cousins,
mm-hmm.
Avril and Jackie.
I see.
Then my uncle was in the Navy and got posted to Esquimalt in Victoria, B.C. And then he sent for his wife to come to live with him. That was Auntie Carol. So she went over with my cousin, Jackie. And so they started their new life in Canada. And then my Nana went over to be with her daughter, my aunt, Carol. So there were all three of them were, or the two, well, my aunt, my Nana, and my uncle, and my cousin were all living in Victoria. And then they sent back word to my dad that there'd be a job with the CPR, because he was a tool grinder, a machinist, that he could get work there. So my dad decided to immigrate to Canada. And then my mom was there by herself with just my dad's father, or mother. So she decided to come over. And by that time, I was a year and a half, and she was pregnant with my sister, Vicky.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Do you remember, do you remember being told anything about that first year and a half before you came here? Anything about you or anything about
I remember my mom saying that she, of course, in those days, you all lived together. There was, no one had houses. You lived in row housing, and it was usually stairs that you had to walk up to the second or third floor. So my mom lived with my dad's mother just shortly before she came to Canada, and that was when the rationing was on, and everything was, all the food was locked in cupboards, and you had to line up for food, and it just wasn't the opulence that you see today, for sure.
Mm-hmm.
And they wanted, my grandmother wanted me to become Roman Catholic, and I was christened in the Roman Catholic Church, and that must have been a huge event for my mother, because I could feel from her she didn't really like that, but she went along with it just to keep the peace.
Now, was she religious in any way?
No. And I think a lot of it was her dad died when she was quite young, and they didn't really have, for some reason, my Nana didn't have a big support group either. She was away from her family, so I think they just moved to Glasgow, or she just moved to Glasgow, lived there with her husband, and there didn't seem to be a lot of family around her. So I think their religion was themselves. They kept the faith with themselves, I guess is a good way of putting it. But I don't think church was a big part of their lives at any point.
Your father? Was it a big part of...
I mean, when you leave school and you're in grade 8, you don't even have a personality. You're just...
Right.
You're so young that you don't know anything other than getting... You know, if you have a job, you get up, you go to work, come home again. That was sort of it. And they moved around so much, or he did when he was younger, that he went to sea and he was away for a couple of years. And so his family would be the ship crew. Yeah. That's what he did from when he was young. Uh-huh. And then he would come home, and of course all that was home at home was his sister. And she married a fellow in the Navy.
Why don't you say for the tape, you were saying earlier about the Merchant Marine, how it had come down in the family of your father.
My great-grandfather was part of a family of 4 or 5 brothers and sisters, and they all were born in Naples. And my dad said... In those days, the eldest son would inherited the winery, and the rest didn't. So they looked elsewhere to make their fortunes, and I guess immigrating to Great Britain was in vogue, or there must have been some opportunities for immigrants to go there. Maybe they gave them free passage. Who knows why they went there? For some reason, they all went there. And... So my great-grandfather was a merchant marine. I guess that was an easy way to get a job with a paycheck to send money home. So that was what a lot of them did that didn't have a lot of education. That's what I think.
Mm-hmm.
So my great-grandfather was a merchant marine. He probably saved his little pennies and came back to Glasgow. And it said that in some of the documents... that he was a confectioner. So he had an ice cream and tobacco shop. So that's what he did. And then, of course, because that was in the family, my grandfather had that shop. So he went away as a merchant marine when he was just out of school, did that for whatever the term is. Maybe you can only sign on for so many times. I'm not sure. But all the documents I have, there's a lot of documentation about that, so I guess I'd have to have someone that knew exactly what all that meant. But a lot of it was when he left, the date when that ship left and when it came back and all that sort of stuff. So he probably thought, okay, I'll work as a merchant marine for 2 or 3 years and save X amount of dollars, and that would be his little nest egg, and then he can come home, get married, and start his life. So his livelihood was the
confection.
And so then that's when he married my grandmother.
No, wait, this is your great grandfather, right? Did you say?
No, this was my grandfather.
Grandfather, now. Okay.
The great grandfather first went as a merchant marine, and they said he was a musician too as well, but this little ice cream and tobacco shop started, and so then my grandfather went away as a merchant marine, came back, and then ran that little shop. Then my dad, out of school, he went away to be a merchant marine, but I guess he didn't want to be a confectioner and tobacconist, and he got a trade as a tool grinder or a machinist. On his passport it says engineer, but that's not what we know as an engineer.
I see.
Here in North America. So that's what he did. And so he went, I think he was probably four or five years, because he was all over the world. He brought, he told me about stories about in India where people would be, you know, just be dead on the street. You just walk over them. He said he didn't like India. He said it was a dirty city, and I'm sure there was a lot of people.
But he worked in the Merchant Marines for about 5 years, you think?
I'd say 4 or 5 years. Uh-huh. I'd have to look at all the documentation again, but I think that was probably... But he was in Bermuda, he came to New York, and he traveled around. Wherever the Merchant Marines went, he was on the ship. So
he had seen the world, essentially, in a way.
In his own little way.
Uh-huh.
And he had these two carved African heads that were made out of black wood of some sort. My sister has them, actually, and they were Negro people, what we call Negro or black people, but they were Africans. So they were carved heads that were bookends. We had those. My sister still has them.
Wow.
And I have a little lamp. It's a little Chinese man pulling a pagoda with a little lampshade on. And that, he said he bought that in China. I have that. And, I mean, I think that's it for his world travels.
Mm-hmm.
Bringing things back. But I'm glad I have it. It's something that's from his past.
Yeah. What kind of a man was he? What was his temperament like?
He's Italian. I guess that's where I get my temper from. because he was such a nice-looking man, I think he had a different viewpoint of himself. That was the movie star era. So there was Cary Grant and all those really nice-looking men. So, of course, he'd be going to the dancing every night, and everyone would be looking at him because he was a nice-looking man. So I think he had grand plans for himself, but because he didn't get the right breaks, nothing like that ever happened. But
you mean as far as being able to dance and being attractive?
Yes.
He thought that maybe someone would discover
happen.
Him.
Yeah, uh-huh. I think uh-huh. They all sort of had that make-believe part in their lives that they, and that was their sort of entertainment. I mean, we get that with watching television. We, whatever television show you're watching, you sort of take one person's viewpoint
and you identify with it.
Yes.
Yeah.
Uh-huh. So I think that's what they did. They would identify with whoever was the popular movie
right.
star at the time.
And you think your mother did that too?
Oh, absolutely.
And your Aunt Carol?
Oh, she looked like Carol Lombard.
Mm-hmm.
And my mom, I don't know who she would look like. Audrey Hepburn, I guess.
Wow.
You know, I mean, uh-huh. They had certain ways about them that were attractive.
Did they talk with you about, you know, that? I mean, it's such an interesting concept about, you know, the early movies and the effect they had on people because it all was so kind of new and...
They had a way about them. I mean, they knew how to dress and how to fix their hair and how to put on makeup and do all that sort of stuff to make themselves look glamorous. Mm-hmm. They knew how to do all that. But because they didn't have the money and the social contacts and the education, really, they didn't really leave the level they were at. They didn't move socially anywhere. They just stayed in the same economic
yeah.
level. They didn't change.
Well, I guess in Great Britain, that's more true, that
there.
People don't
no.
jump classes
no,
the
no.
way they can do that more easily here.
So probably going to the new country and the new life, they probably had thought, oh, things will be better over uh-huh. there. And my dad did say he wanted to go and work in the States at the Boeing plant, the airplane plant. And he went down for an interview, but in those days you had to be able to post a bond of $5,000. Well, that was a fortune to him. That was in the 40s, so I have no idea what that would be like, $50,000 now or more, wouldn't it?
Mm.
So, of course, that didn't happen, and he couldn't go. So he was back again living under sort of the... my Nana kind of ruled the roost there about what should and shouldn't be done, and... how people should act and shouldn't act and all this sort of stuff. So I think there was a lot of tension there
mm-hmm.
with my Uncle Vic was a different personality. He got along with her, but I think my dad resented my Nana telling her, like interfering. Of course, in those days, they told each other everything because that was their support group. They had no one else to talk to about what was wrong or what they didn't like and but so then everybody got to know way too much. They didn't need to know all that, and that would all come back to them. And it just caused internal problems all the time. So instead of working out the problems between them, I think it caused more problems.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, I grew up thinking that there was always problems with them, and problems with my aunt and uncle, and instead of having a nice family dinner, it was all what had happened yesterday sort of thing. And so it wasn't a very close family that way, I don't think. They weren't able to rise above what happened yesterday. It just dominated their whole lives. So
Well, now, you mentioned that your father was told that he could find work in Canada, and so
and he did with the CPR.
But meanwhile, your mother and you.
Oh, first of all, sorry. He worked at a lumber yard
in Canada.
When he first got there, he was at a lumber yard because he couldn't get on with the CPR right away. For some reason, I mean, I think just things just don't happen instantly. But eventually, he got that. So when he was at the lumber yard is when he went down to the Boeing plant to see, but he couldn't get a job there. So I think that's when the CPR job was the main focus, was after that. Yeah. He didn't come to a job at the CPR. I know that.
Yeah. So then what, after he got the job, he sent for you and your mother?
My mom was there by that time. So he landed in September, wasn't it, on the passport trip?
Yeah, it was September.
And when I talked to my cousin, she said she remembers when I came and my mom to Victoria, because she was living there with her aunt, her mother by that time, my aunt. And she said, I remember pictures of Auntie, well, she called her Auntie Tet. They shortened Henrietta to Etta, and then they shortened Etta to Tet, T-E-T. When they came to Canada, nobody liked that name, and they would tease her. So she changed her name to Terry. So all my life, Henrietta. My mother's been Terry.
Oh.
She never called her. She would sign Henrietta when she had to, but she would. If someone said, what is your name? She'd say Terry. Yeah. So you asked me... So my dad came through Quebec in September.
Okay.
And Mom came through New York, Ellis Island in New York, and it had to be in October, November. And the reason I know that is because my sister Vicky was born in Victoria in the Jubilee Hospital in February. So she had to have come between... Right. October, November, December.
Uh-huh.
And the earliest that my cousin could remember was when she saw me and my mother. She didn't have a heavy coat on. So she said it had to be in October or November.
Oh, I see.
There's pictures showing us when we first got there on the steps outside of the house or wherever. And it was taken on a nice day. There was no coats on.
Uh-huh.
But the other pictures from when my sister was born in February, everyone has coats on. Yeah.
So why was it that you and your mother came through New York? Do you know?
I don't know the reason for that. I think it was probably any trip like that, the financial cost would be the most important thing, or the availability. So... why she didn't come through with my dad to start with, or maybe he just decided to go early so he could get a position, I don't know. But I would always think to myself that it had to be a financial reason, the cost of everything.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe because he was a merchant marine, he got to go on a ship because of that at a less cost than if he had to go another way. I don't know why.
Uh-huh. Yeah, let me just check this. We're continuing here after discovering that the outlet was faulty. Okay, so we were talking they came to New York probably because of it was easier or less money to get a ticket to come through that way. Okay, so you and your mother were traveling alone.
Right, and I lived in a harness. My mother had a harness on me the whole time because she was scared I'd just walk off the edge of the deck.
Uh-huh.
And she lived, or she shared a room, a stateroom, or what type of room it was, with another woman and her child, because they didn't allow women and men to mix. So that's how she came over, with another person. I never did ask her what that lady's name was. And I said to her, where did you do your laundry, or where did you wash the diapers? And she said, in the room, and just hung them up. So having the luxury of a washer and dryer available to you just didn't happen. And they had, their meals were cafeteria style. So again, I think it was the monetary aspect of the least expensive way to travel, and it was probably, instead of fine dining, it was cafeteria buffet style.
Right.
So that's how she spent her 2 or 3 months coming over.
You don't mean she was traveling 2 or 3 months?
Well, however long it took the ship to come over.
By then, I would think 2 weeks would have done it.
Okay, well, but that's how she traveled.
But so, in other words, the ship left from Liverpool. Its name?
I'm not.
No, I don't know. Was there anything else? And your mother had been living with you.
With her mother-in-law.
And where was that?
That would have been in London, previous to leaving.
Okay.
Before that, they lived in Brechin. In Scotland.
And spell that one for
me. Brechin, and it's on the east coast of Scotland.
Okay. So that would be where you were born?
I was born in Bushy Heath, Watford, Hertfordshire, in London. And the reason I was born there, during the war, you weren't allowed to be in any hospital in the city, because of the bombing. So they asked anyone who was, any of the women that were pregnant, to go out to the outlying areas of the city. And so my mom had to go by train to that area, and that's where I was born.
Mm-hmm. And then it was after that that she moved with your grandmother.
She lived with my Nana and my aunt before she was married.
In
London. First of all, they all lived in Glasgow. And then after my grandfather died on my mom's side, her dad, then they moved to London, and my mom worked my grandmother worked there as a milliner. Mm-hmm. And my mother and her sister, my aunt, worked in the shops. That's how they earned their living. And my mother met my father at the palace, theater, whatever it was called. They called it the Pally. And that's where my mom met my dad. And after they were married, my mom and my dad lived with my grandmother and aunt for a short time. And my aunt had been married to a fellow called Jack Dovey. He'd gone, when the war broke out, he'd gone away to sea and, of course, died. He never came back. And she was pregnant with her first child, Jacqueline. A member of the Dovey family came to visit Auntie Carol and my mom and my grandmother, and he to pay his respects. And he ended up marrying my aunt. So my aunt was first of all married to Jack Dovey, and then after he died, she married Vic Dovey, who really was Jack's cousin.
Mm-hmm. Then did you and your mother go back to Scotland to live with your father's mother?
That was just before we immigrated to Canada. But so in the early days of the war, my mom worked in a factory, and my dad had a job elsewhere making tools. And they, I think, were coming back either to my grandmother's house or to my grandmother's house on my dad's side or on my mother's side. I think they probably took turns I remember my mother talking about the rationing and coupons, and so we didn't really talk a lot in detail exactly, but I will ask my cousin. She'll remember a little bit better than
mm-hmm.
I will.
Mm-hmm.
And so then my Uncle Vic was in the Navy. So he got a posting at Esquimalt, British Columbia, in Victoria, British Columbia. So he went over. My aunt Auntie Carol went and my cousin Jackie to be with their dad. Then my grandmother, on my mom's side, decided she was going to immigrate to Canada. So everyone was over there except my father and my mother. And my Uncle Vic wrote back and said that there'd be work for my dad if he would come out, or if the whole family would come out.
Mm-hmm.
So my dad went by himself first. I have no idea why, but he went through Quebec. And he first worked in Victoria in a lumber yard. And he wanted to go down. I guess that didn't suit him very well, and he wanted to make a better life. And he went down to apply at the Boeing plant in Seattle. There's a big Boeing plant there. And he had to, at that time, post a bond for himself of $5,000. Well, he just didn't have that kind of money and had no way of raising that type of money. So that aspect of that, having a better life down there, was just didn't happen. So by that time, my mom came a month after my dad, we think. If he landed in September, then my mom came by a freighter ship through Ellis Island in New York for some reason, and she came either October, November, or just not sure what the date was.
Was there anything else about the voyage that you remember?
I don't remember anything about the voyage.
Or anything that you were told?
She just said it wasn't a luxury liner and it wasn't that much fun.
Mm-hmm. So how did your mother get with you from New York City?
Oh, well, that she told me the story about that.
Okay.
And the picture book that I have, the picture of me and my buggy on Ellis Island, she took the picture of that with the Statue of Liberty in the background. That was a very good photo of her to take, actually.
Yeah, it was. Did she ever talk about Ellis Island or anything that happened then?
Well, I think what happened in those days, you just heard it, told to go here, do this, do that, and it was just following orders.
Mm-hmm.
And she didn't say how many. To me, it wasn't a very long time that she spent, so she must have had the money to book a passage on a train.
Train. Mm-hmm.
So she got on a train, and I think she went up to Montreal.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know where the rail lines went in those days. They probably haven't changed it. Is the direct line from here to Montreal or here to Toronto? It would be Montreal first.
I would think Montreal.
Right. So she went. Now, all this time, I was a year and a half old, and she was 6 or 7 months pregnant. No, she'd be 5 months pregnant with my sister. She would be going the least inexpensive way. And she said that when she got on the train in Canada, a conductor felt sorry for her when he finally figured out that she was going over to Victoria. And he let her sleep in a sleeping berth because she was sleeping up, or sitting up, sleeping. So I guess he just felt sorry for her and he let her lie down in a berth. So she said that they were kind to her on the plane, or the train.
Train, uh-huh. And then did she tell you about arriving in Victoria, and was your father there to meet the train? And
she didn't say anything about that. I think she was just probably so lonely to see the rest of her family. She really enjoyed their company, I know that. It made her feel happy and safe. But she's the youngest, so there's the difference as to being the oldest.
Mm-hmm.
And so I think she was just glad to see everyone because she was the last to come over. Mm-hmm. And being pregnant and having a year and a half old child probably wouldn't be the best way to travel.
Right.
So I'm sure she was so happy to be there that someone would look after me and give her a break.
Yeah. So that early time, did your father live then with your...
They all lived with Auntie Carol and Uncle Vic. I think my Nana had her own place by this time. I'm not really sure, but my mom and my dad lived with Auntie Carol and Uncle Vic for a while till they got their own place. And we lived on Quadra Street. But the very first street that we lived on, I have to ask my cousin because she... She told me the name because I said, oh, Quadra Street. She said, no, that picture wasn't taken at Quadra Street. It was the first house we lived in. I said, oh, I didn't even know that name. Because the whole time they talked about Victoria, it was the Quadra Street house that they talked about.
Okay, so that's where your Nana was being a milliner?
No. Nana worked by that time. She was a milliner in London.
London.
I guess, I don't know why she didn't get a job as a milliner in Victoria, but she worked at the Jubilee Hospital as a nursing assistant.
Oh.
And it was funny because the fellow that I'm married to now, we went just on a trip to Victoria, and we were in a campground, and this is when I was young. We had a van, and we started talking with an older fellow, because at that time I was only 25 or so he would have been in his 50s or 60s, and my husband and this fellow went out fishing, and we just got talking, and he had worked at the Jubilee Hospital and knew my Nana. It was one of those chance meetings.
And it was your Nana who I think you described before we were on tape as wearing a hat and gloves and furs. And
after we moved to Calgary, she would always come through once a year for a holiday. And she would get off the train, because that's how they traveled in those days, was the train. And she'd always have her lovely suit on and her fox, I don't know what you call it.
Stole.
Stole, right. And it had the little face with the eyes and the feet and the tail. And it would be draped around her, and she always had her brooch on, and powder, and rouge, and lipstick, and hat, and gloves, of course. Always gloves.
And the shoes that came up high in front?
Yeah, they were slip-on shoes. They weren't laced, and that, but they came up high, just below your ankle bone. Because I remember looking at her shoes a lot for some reason.
And so she was quite a lady.
Oh, yeah. She was always dressed to the best of her ability.
Uh-huh.
And she actually, I think she furnished her place by going to a lot of thrift stores and secondhand places. Because she always had all these lovely, and I still have a lot of her teacups and all these things that she acquired. And she was the person who started me quilting, because she'd gone to one of these thrift stores and had purchased a kit that someone had cut out all the pieces so to be like applique, what we know as applique, and it was two long panels, and they were matching, like there were mirror imaging on each side, mm-hmm. and everything had been basted on, but not permanently sewn. So she gave that to me and said, and my nickname was Larry. They called me Larry. My name was Lorraine, but I mean, I grew up with my Nana and everyone calling me Larry in the family. And she said, here, Larry, I know you can finish this. And that was my first bedspread when we were married, was this blue applique flowers. And I went on to make curtains to match and a bed ruffle and things like that. So, you know, I don't know if I would have gotten really into quilting if I hadn't had that to work on. So it took me a long time to do it. Yeah. I wished I hadn't thrown it out, because those days was old and faded, and so I threw it out.
Well, now, your grandmother, could you say anything about her adaptation, having uprooted herself at an older age than most?
She was a victim of circumstances. Her husband, his name was James Fotheringham Frith. Now, he worked, when they lived in Scotland, he worked at a mill or something, but he was always dressed. I have pictures of him with the hat and the top coat and everything. And he was what they call a man's man type of person. He would always, there was work and family in his life. And he would always go out at night. So whether he went to clubs or what he did, I don't know, but he was always out in the evening. And I remember my grandfather died when he was quite young. And when I was younger, I'd say to my mother, well, what did he die of? Well, the flu or this or that. And I could tell there was something not
right. Something behind that. Mm-hmm.
So after I was married, I guess I was asking again. That was my problem, asking too many questions. And she said, well, I might as well tell you you're married now. And I said, what? And she said,
well, now that you're married, you can handle
yeah.
it.
She said, one day I came home and she found her dad had put his head in the oven.
Oh.
So my mother found my dad because I guess my grandmother was out working. I said, oh, why? She said, well, in those days, what he probably had was syphilis. So he thought he was done anyway, finished, and he might as well. And maybe the shame that went with it, I don't know. So I had that. That took me a while to digest that one. I said, oh, that's interesting. So my Nana, I think after that happened, I think she had a very closed door to that aspect of life anymore. She probably just didn't trust in any man anymore.
Mm-hmm.
Thinking, well, it was going to happen again, or who knows. She just...
She wrote off being a part of a couple.
Uh-huh. Dependent on any uh-huh. man. Uh-huh. So I think that's why she went into the mill. She said that after that happened, of course they had to sell the house or they couldn't afford to live there. And she said, we lived above a shop. I said, well, where did you move to next? Well, we lived above a shop, wherever. And I think she probably got a job in that. The shop probably was a milliner's. So she probably started as a milliner's assistant.
Mm-hmm.
So that's how she just probably had to live from hand to mouth and make things. She wouldn't have had a huge pension or
mm-mm.
life insurance or anything. She'd probably have to make her own way, right? So that's what they did in the early days. Mm-hmm. And then she probably got fed up with that, and that's when they moved to London.
Well, how would you say she adapted to Canada?
Well, I think she kept a lot of her British attitudes and code of ethics. I'll never forget this. We weren't allowed to blow our nose in the room. We had to leave the room. It still annoys me when someone blows their nose. Mm. We weren't allowed to speak unless spoken to. I mean, there was all these little codes that you were brought up with.
Now, did everybody enforce that, or is that coming from your grandmother? Or?
Oh, my mother, of the two of the sisters, my mother was probably the most freer with that. She wasn't as strict. But my aunt and my Nana were both like that. They didn't tolerate a lot of noise and disruption and all that sort of stuff. It was, they ran the show sort of thing.
And how about your father?
Well, he just gave up after a while. I don't think he liked it. And I think that's when, like they said, oh, he drank a lot and he didn't that. Well, he probably just went down to the pub. He didn't have a lot of money to drink with. But I think he would probably, two or three beers would probably be enough. And
yeah,
that's how he coped with the stress of it. Because he didn't have money to join an athletic club or golf club or any of that sort of stuff. So I think that was his outlet.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And then that's when he saw the opportunity to move to Calgary to work with the CPR. So the excuse was, move to Calgary, get a job with the CPR, but get away from Nana and Auntie Carol and all that and start their own life.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So that's why my mom and dad came. So when they moved to Victoria, I was a year and a half old. My sister Vicky was born there in 1948. And my brother Paul was born there in 1950. And then they moved to Calgary a year later. And then I have the last brother, Bradley, was born in 1954.
I see.
So there's 8 years between myself and my brother.
Uh-huh. So compared with your friends growing up and all that, would you say that your treatment at home, based on where your mother and father were coming from, was different in any way than the kids that you hung around with? Any sort of old world ways that were made you...
Well, their accent. You were sort of ashamed of it in a way because people would say, what did she say? Because they couldn't understand them.
Oh.
And a lot of the words that I said had that pronunciation.
Right.
You go to school and you learn, well, it doesn't... Because roof, I mean, they'd say the roof. Get up, get down from the roof. If we were up climbing on... And I probably would say the roof. And they'd say, they wouldn't understand that. So you learned to adapt quickly because you didn't want to be different. And then having red hair and freckles, you were always different. So that was...
What was Harry Freckles? I don't know that one.
Red hair and freckles.
Oh, red hair and freckles.
They'd say, redhead, redhead, fire in the woodshed. Grew up with that. And, you know, you just... And having four... Like, four in the family was a large family. That's what I remember.
They'd really?
Say, how many brothers and sisters do you have? They'd have... one or two, maybe three. Four was a bit excessive.
Huh.
That's what I remember.
Yeah.
With the customs, the adults were the most important people, as opposed to the children are the most important people nowadays, it seems. Mm-hmm. Everything revolves around the wishes and desires of children. I think they've gone too far that way. So... we were never included in any conversations that I remember. You came in to visit, you were sent outside to play or in this room, whatever. You never sat and were really part of the adult conversation. But then they were always just moaning on about each other, so who wanted to be part of that conversation? We were too young to be part of that. But it wasn't the same way that families are now. I remember that.
Uh-huh.
And you really, your opinion didn't really matter till you were like a teenager. Or... That's what I really remember.
Do you remember other people who had immigrated in Calgary?
We lived, when we first lived in Calgary, we lived in Riverside, which was a huge immigration collection area. There was a lot of Italian people. But my mother was really... she really was sort of, she kept to herself. She wasn't really unfriendly. She'd be very friendly to you, but that was as far as it went. As far as forming relationships, she was very selective about that. So she became really good friends with a couple down the road. Their last name was Spielman, so they were German. And the one lady's name was, remember in a minute, and then another couple, and that couple just had TV just came into being, so we were allowed, we'd all get the pajamas on and have our bath, and the bath was once a week in a galvanized tub, and I remember that we all were in and out of the same water.
Mm-hmm.
I remember that. So the hair, and I mean, I'm sure we were kept clean enough, but it wasn't like having a shower every day. So having a bath was a big ordeal because the four of us had to be in and out of this tub. So we'd all have our bath and be ready, and we'd go down and watch Roy Rogers or Hopalong Cassidy. The Ed Sullivan Show was like an adult show. It wasn't really... Oh, Roy Rogers. That was the big one.
Yeah.
So they were the first people on the block to have a television, so... they were kind enough to let us go there. So she must have been friends with them at some point for that to happen.
Yeah.
And she kept friends with the Spielmans. Remember their name? When they moved away to the northeast part of town, we moved, she still kept that friendship for a while, but not the couple with the TV for some reason. But my mother didn't drive, and there was no money for anything other than food. So it wasn't...
How did your mother feel about immigrating to Canada?
I think she was happy to get away from Dad's mother and that life of being restricted. I don't think she liked that.
Mm-hmm.
Because all her life she would be in excess or more flamboyant than normal. And I think it was just a release of the control and the war. I'm sure the war, too.
Mm-hmm. How about your father? How did he adjust adapt?
I think because he finally realized he was locked into the CPR forever, he gambled a lot. They have bookies at organized stuff like that at work. So he would bet on the racing. And that was a huge sore point always with them, because the bookies would take the money. In those days, they got paid cash. I remember him sitting at the kitchen table counting out the money. This was for the rent. This was for that. And that, the rent was $25 a month. Mm-hmm. That I had to take it down on the bus. Mm. And there was so much money for food, whatever, you know, that sort of thing. And I remember him counting it all up. And, of course, before it even came home, the bookies had taken what he owed them. So there was always a huge fight about that. Mm. And I think they were paid weekly or biweekly. They weren't paid by the month. Mm. So every 2 weeks there was a huge fight about the money.
Yeah, yeah.
And then my mom got fed up with all that, and she went out. I think she's got a very independent streak, my mother, or did have. So I think she just got fed up with the fighting and decided, fine, I'm going to earn my own money. So she started cleaning businesses at night.
Oh, uh-huh.
And the first job that I remember, because I used to go with her, was it was called Hollingshead Secretarial Institute. So that's where you went to learn to be a secretary. So I'd go with her on Sundays. I remember that. Hmm. And then she worked cleaning a lawyer's office. And then she got a job in a school, which wasn't far from where we lived. And there was a lady there called Mary Layden, who was Scottish descent. So she had her own little world then, her own little support group, other than my mother and aunt.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
So by this time, it would have been in the 60s, Uncle Vic was finished with the Navy, and he and Auntie Carol and my two cousins decided to move to Calgary to be with Ted and Frank. And then my Nana came as well.
I see.
So they all ended up living in Calgary.
And how, was that okay with your father?
No. They were all here again. But he and Uncle Vic joined the Elks Golf Club, so they had an outlet there.
Uh-huh.
So they'd do the golfing and that. But they kept their lives away from us. Like it was, we'd drive up to Banff. That was the family outing. And my dad would fall asleep at the wheel and go off the side of the road, of course, going 30 miles an hour, I guess, because they didn't drive fast. And there were these huge lineups always to go up there. No one was hurt or anything, but that was the end of the outings because my mother would get scared that, you know, he was going to kill us all because he'd fall asleep at the wheel after he'd been in the hot springs. So I remember going up to Sylvan Lake, which was a little area just north of the city, and you'd drive up to the lake and camp. Oh, my dad, they didn't camp. They had no idea. I think they were going to rent a cabin, and that didn't go well at all either. So we didn't do much as a family, and I think they just didn't have the skills. They didn't have a family that did that, so they never learned how to enjoy a family life. We'd go to the drive-in. Well, that was fine because no one would talk to each other. You just
right.
watch TV, so you got along somewhat. But we never did things with Auntie Carol and Uncle Vic. We did the odd dinner, but this is the truth. My aunt had plastic on her pink couch.
Mm. I remember those days.
You weren't
days.
Allowed to sit on the couch. It was either the floor or outside. That was it. Mm-hmm. So that was our life.
Yeah.
You know, it wasn't, it was a very, I'd say, very regimented compared to what life is like now. And it wasn't, it revolved around the adults and not the children,
yeah.
is how I saw it.
Could you say anything about what it meant to you or to any other member of your family, the fact that you had been born in Europe and had, you know, come to Canada rather than being a native Canadian, what difference it made?
When I was younger, you felt weird because you're different, because everyone else was from here. So because you were different, you thought, well, you're not the same or less. You always thought that. Now that I'm older, I've thought to myself, boy, would my life be different if I was living in England? I wouldn't have the life I have now. I wouldn't have the daughter I have now. I would be a different person. Or I could have been living in New Zealand, because my dad, if my aunt and uncle hadn't gone to Victoria, The next person to go to would have been the other aunt and uncle in New Zealand, and we would have been living there.
Do you how when you think of the difference in your lives or in your huge. What your life would have been? Do you make comparison? Accent. I mean, do you compare
always.
It favorably or unfavorably or?
I have the ability to see the good and bad. I mean, I don't feel sorry for myself.
Uh-huh.
But I'm very aware of I would be a different person. And when we lived, Ken and I, my husband, lived in Australia from 1981 to 85, and he went there for a job. He had a job to go to. Excuse me. And that was a wonderful experience because we got A, to travel, all expenses are paid for, and to live in a country is completely different than visiting. Mm-hmm. So you get to be friends with people, you share their lives, you see they all have the same wants and desires, really, basically. They want to have a good life for their family and with the least amount of problems as possible. It's just like everyone else. But there are differences. To me, Australia had a very, still has a very English way about them all. They think they're really Americanized compared to the British people, but they're quite British, really, in their little customs and how they do things. And I really enjoyed it there. I felt more at home there. I felt at ease there. It didn't bother me, the differences. It bothered my husband because he felt they were being too familiar about everything.
Oh.
But it's just from the background that he comes from.
And he's Canadian.
Yeah, he's a Ukrainian descent.
Oh, uh-huh.
So, I mean, that's another story. So his way of interacting with people is all, it's more the ethnic way of dealing with people. But anyway, it just, I felt at home in England, or Scotland.
In Australia.
It didn't bother me.
Probably of your background, right?
Yes.
Yeah. Right. Right. Well, before, I'm trying to gauge the end of this, but
right.
What would you say is your proudest of that you've done in your life? What makes you feel a lot of satisfaction?
Personally?
Yeah.
Well... I guess with, when I was very young, I worked, so I didn't do anything that was outstanding or memorable there. I was able to bring home a wage and support our mm-hmm. family, sort of thing. And then as I got older, after we came back from Australia, I mean, I guess the friendships that you make with people, mm-hmm. you can't place a value on that.
Right.
And I still have friends from there. Then when we came back to Calgary, things were easier. We were older and had a little bit of money, and we joined a golf club. And I went into lots of competitions and won things. So I guess there were certain goals that you set out for and you obtained. So personally, that mm-hmm. has been satisfying to me. It makes you feel good. And I've joined clubs and held positions with certain clubs and things mm-hmm. like that, and that's given me satisfaction there that you start out and you accomplish something.
Yeah, yeah.
I haven't won any Nobel Peace Prizes or anything like that, but, you know, there's been situations that have arisen, and you learn how to cope with them and have people still like you afterwards. So those are accomplishments. It's all
sure.
to do with relationships and friendships, I guess.
Uh-huh. Okay.
And I have good friends. I have good friends wherever I've been.
Mm-hmm. And is there anything else that you can think of about immigration, the effect on you or your family? Before we close, just anything.
I think that watching how my mother interacted with her sister and her mother, with my sister and my brothers, I've tried not to... let our relationships go back down to that level of disharmony and disagreements all the time. And especially when both my mother and my dad passed away, I was executor of both their wills. So it was dealing with the siblings in wishes about the parents, how I perceived their wishes, dealing with the financial settlements of everything, and that wasn't, there were some incidences that weren't, could have gone bad so that we wouldn't be in harmony.
Mm-hmm.
And that's happened a lot in families. So I said, this is not going to, this part of our lives is not going to end up making us enemies. It just isn't. So we're just going to get through this. And so I was proud of that part.
Yeah.
Of we still speak. And we're friends. You know, we're, my brother actually was here, the youngest one. He comes here on business a lot. He lives in Santa Monica, and we spent 3 days. He left. He would have been here, but he left to go back because of the rain. He had no idea how bad it was going to be, and so he just wanted to get out. He left on Friday, but you know, he made an effort to be here when we were here, and
So your sister and your brothers, are they here in the States?
No, my sister lives in White Rock.
That's Canada?
Yes, uh-huh. By Vancouver.
Uh-huh.
My one brother lives in Calgary, and the other one lives in Santa Monica.
Oh, uh-huh, yeah. Okay, well, is there anything else? We're just nearly at the end of the tape. Anything you'd like to say before we close?
About my parents? You know, they tried to give us a better life. You know, they're on their way. When you think back to it.
Mm.
I think they did.
Uh-huh. Okay. Well, I want to thank you very much. A lovely interview.
Sorry. It was it was an unexpected pleasure meeting you.
Thanks. Yeah, I guess you feel moved by the fact that, you know, they tried and there were always conflicts, but somehow they persisted, yeah. And it sounds like you've benefited from the things that you wish they had done otherwise.
Yeah, and it's too bad they weren't here, so I could tell them that, you know, it might have been an interest to them or not. I don't know. I think the war had a lot of impact on them. They didn't really let themselves get too involved with things. I think that was the shame of all that, because, you know, they never knew if the building was going to be there when they came home, or people that they were friends with, would they be friends with them again, or their job, or I think it was a very unsettled time of their life. They didn't really have anything that was theirs. They didn't own a house, they didn't own a car, their job could go tomorrow, so there was no real stable environment.
Uh-huh.
Not like we have. That's how I felt they lived.
Yeah, and of course you didn't know them before, but after the war, that they had those qualities, and you attribute them to having lived through a very trying time.
Very difficult time.
Yeah.
I mean, our most difficult decisions are, what are we going to wear today? And you know, we take mm-hmm. so much for granted. They didn't have a lot. I mean, they weren't like the people who were in the concentration camps, that's for sure.
Right.
And what they had to go through. But, you know, compared to what most people have today, they have to be content with very little. I'm sure they were.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
But I think they thought coming here would be the answer to whatever it was they were dreaming and hoping for. And they probably did enjoy their lives. You know, maybe we were all, the home was happy. I remember that part mm-hmm. of it, except for the money issue. There was never enough money, but then that's the same thing as for now. But, you know, there was lots of happy times.
Mm-hmm.
I'm sure of that.
Yeah. Oh. Okay, well, thank you again. And I have been speaking with Lorraine Romanchuk.
Romanchuk.
Why can't I say Romanchuk?
Romanchuk.
who did come here as a year and a half year old in 1947 with her mother, and came through Ellis Island and then went to join her father in Canada. This is Janet Levine for the National Park Service, and I'm signing off.